Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished professional from Milwaukee, USA, Cheryl Ninh. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Cheryl is a river keeper for the Milwaukee River. She directs the citizen-based water quality monitoring program in the Milwaukee River Basin, and Cheryl has worked with the U.S. Forest Service, the U.S. Peace Corps and Crisis Corps, and the City of New York Natural Resources Group. So Cheryl, before we speak about the Milwaukee River, tell me about your own journey and what motivated you to become a river keeper after so many diverse roles.
Yeah, well, I've been, privileged to try a lot of different jobs. Early in my career, I was a Peace Corps volunteer. So I was in Ecuador for several years, working with communities there to, improve fisheries and to grow food and sustainably. And I worked for the City of New York, as you mentioned, for several years, and also worked for the U.S. Forest Service. I worked for the state of Michigan fairly briefly as well with farmers. And so I had done a lot of government work. In my master's degree, was working to have a species of frog listed as federally threatened. And we had amazing science and genetics and populations and all of this information. And it became pretty obvious to me that the science wasn't enough sometimes, that you could have the best science in the world, but if it wasn't being applied to policy, that we weren't going to reach the goals that we wanted to. So I think I was very interested in working for a nonprofit. I had never worked for a nonprofit, and I saw that as having a lot of flexibility, allowing me to have a voice, which often you don't have in the government, being able to offer your opinions freely, and really, be a voice for the waters and for the life that's in the waters and around the waters. Mm-hmm. And so I really loved when I heard about River Keeper, the idea of being able to be a voice for the rivers and really fight for clean water and healthier communities. Mm-hmm. I grew up kind of in and on and around the Great Lakes here in the United States, and have been kind of a drawn to water since a young girl. So I felt very important to me and to be able to fight so that people would be able to swim and fish and drink the water that we have, and to make sure that that we're protecting these resources for future generations.
Fascinating. So Cheryl, what is the role of a river keeper? And can you describe a typical day in the life of a river keeper or Cheryl Ninh?
For sure. Well, typical is difficult, but yes. So we're part of a larger network called Water Keeper Alliance. And so we have, well over 300 folks that are river keepers or bay keepers, water keepers, sound keepers. And essentially, we're advocates, we're voices, we're lawyers, we're scientists for the river. What often I do is look for problems that are affecting the rivers and then find solutions to those problems. We often don't do that alone. We work with a lot of different agencies and other environmental groups, community groups, and in different ways. We respond to community concerns. So if something looks amiss, there's dead fish, the river looks a strange color, there's a weird smell, those types of things get sent to us. And then we, work to figure out what's going on scientifically, if we can, to solve those problems. And so we do also litigation occasionally, but most of my typical day, I would say, is seasonally varies a bit. In the summer, like here we have, normally this time of year we would have ice, but we've had a very mild winter. But, in the summer, we're often patrolling by boat. We're doing water monitoring in the rivers. Pretty much all year round, I attend a lot of public meetings. I have one tonight around projects that are impacting the river, either for good or bad, or just public meetings, public presentations to the community to educate them about the river and the importance of protecting it. We also review all of the permits. So anybody who's looking to discharge pollutants into the waterway, anybody who's looking to develop within, several hundred meters of the river, we monitor those permits to make sure that they're doing that in a way that's protective of the river and minimizing that runoff to it. Mm. We also do a lot of public comments on different kind of local, state, federal policy. So that often can mean that I'm behind a desk a lot or I'm in meetings, but we do try to make sure that we're out and connecting with the resource as much as possible.
Great response. Thank you. And Cheryl, what are some of the biggest misconceptions people have about river health?
Yeah, it really depends. I feel like it's interesting. I think a lot of times it's based on someone's background. But, you know, often what I'll hear when I tell people I'm the Milwaukee River Keeper, they'll say like, oh, God, that river, it's so bad. Like, I would never go out to that river. Like, mm-hmm. why, you know, you probably would, you know, grow an extra, you know, ear or something. Like, why would mm-hmm. you be out in there? But, you know, I think in general, I think historically a lot of our rivers in the U.S. and, you know, around the world, were treated as, you know, cesspools. They were treated as a place to send our waste, our industrial waste, our human waste. And I think that has been a big story to change. I mean, I know in the city of Milwaukee, you know, if you look at how our city was built, all of the buildings have their backs to the river. And it was very intentional because at the time, you know, in the 1850s, when our city was growing, you know, the river was bad. It was awful. The water quality was bad. And so everybody wanted to, you know, access those buildings from the street and not to really pay attention to the river. And so a lot of what I do is battling that conception, you know, that misconception that the river is, you know, is much cleaner than it used to be. You know, we still have a lot of challenges, certainly, and we're working to improve that. But, you know, we went from like about 4 species of fish in downtown Milwaukee to like 40 to 50 species. A lot of that is based on, you know, major sewage treatment plant improvements, dam removals. There were a lot of dams back in the day for mills, for wool, for wood, for grain. And all of those kind of blocked up the river, kind of like clogs in your artery. And so removing those dams has really allowed the river to cleanse itself and to improve its water quality. And so we've had massive improvements in water quality. And so finally, we have a river walk along the water. People are wanting to be along the water to have restaurants, you know, homes along the water, and that has its own set of challenges. But, you know, I think people have kind of suffered from low expectations. And so I need to kind of communicate to people that, you know, we're working to clean up this water. It's continuing to get better and that we have a right to clean water. Like under our Clean Water Act in the U.S., we were supposed to have clean rivers and lakes by 1987. And sadly, we're not quite there. But, you know, it is our right to have clean water, and we're not going to get there unless we demand it. And so I think, you know, we try to get people out in the water in boats. We try to get people out fishing. We hike along the water. We've even co-hosted with several other local organizations, an open water swim. We've done twice to get people out swimming in the river during a time of the year when it's pretty safe to swim. And, you know, we were not always able to do that because of different challenges that we have, but you know, that we really are trying to challenge people's conceptions about the river and to think about how amazing would it be if you could go out and swim in the river at lunch after, you know, while you're in the middle of your work day, and kind of questioning why we don't quite have that yet.
Very well said. And, you know, I know from India and that a lot of our rivers have traditionally been just used for dumping all the effluents, etc. But I think that's beginning to change. And you, of course, are much, much ahead in the US. But my next question to you, Cheryl, is how do communities balance economic development with river conservation?
Yeah, you know, I think they really are mutually dependent. You know, I think it used to be that, you know, that there was kind of this sense that environmentalists were against economic development. And I don't think that's true. I think what we're really looking for is to make sure that we have sound development, you know, that we have sustainable development. And, you know, I think that they both can be compatible. I think, you know, one example I have here from Milwaukee is that we, you know, we have an area of our river and kind of very close to downtown Milwaukee that, you know, there used to be a dam in place. And when the dam was in place, there was a large lake and we were able to remove that dam and several others upstream. But the zoning of those lands was like industrial and office, and it basically didn't make a lot of sense. So we were able to kind of go back in with the city and essentially put in a special zoning district to protect the whole area along the river. And because it's really important for, you know, not only protecting water quality, but for flooding, for flood management. And I think with climate change, you know, I think things are probably very different in India, but in our area, what we're mostly seeing is like these very strong, heavy, volatile rain events that happen out of nowhere. And, you know, a lot of our rain is coming in one or two events versus 10 or 12 rain events. And so it's very important that we have these kind of sponges or these floodplains to absorb that water and really protect our cities. And so, you know, protecting the river is protecting the city, protecting the economic development downstream. And, you know, so being able to protect that area too provides a huge recreational asset, which I would argue is very good for our local economy. And in fact, improving water quality has been massive. As I mentioned in my story before, you know, we have a river walk now going in downtown. The water quality is improving. And, you know, there's been like well over $1 billion of development that has been attracted to the river now because the water quality has improved. And so, you know, what we find ourselves doing now, too, is making sure that in the context of that, that we're still, you know, developing a smart way to minimize that runoff from our urban landscape, which is one of our biggest water quality challenges. It's the runoff from our cities, the runoff from our farms, from many diffuse different sources. And that's kind of probably our biggest source of pollution. So we want to make sure that we're redeveloping in a smarter way than we did 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago. But also that we're making sure that we're providing public access to people for the water. You know, in Milwaukee, all of the dead end streets kind of are public access, so people can fish there, people can launch a kayak or a canoe there. So we're wanting to make sure that that we're, you know, protecting the resource, letting people, you know, access it, because our rivers and our lakes, and under our U.S. laws, you know, they belong to all of us. Our state kind of manages them in trust for the public, but they belong to the people. And I'm sure it's the same as in India. And so we want to make sure that as part of the economic development, that people are still able to use the river, and not just the people who can afford to live next to it. And so that is, you know, something that, you know, is an issue in some of our areas. But, you know, I would say, you know, improving the water quality of the river, conserving the river, you know, has really been a real boon to economic development. And so I think, you know, that is something too, that when we are often advocating for different river policies, now we put in a water trail some years back, which is really just letting people know where the safe and legal access points are to the river. And, you know, we had, you know, a lot of support for that, because I think, you know, getting people out on the water, you know, you get a whole different view of a place, and it really, you know, has attracted a lot of tourists. And we went from having zero kayak companies to, we have like four kayak companies now. So like companies that basically just rent boats for tourists and for residents to get out in the water. And I think once people get out in the water, they're inspired to protect the resource, you know, and so, and it really inspires that sense of stewardship. And I think one of our biggest threats is that we're so on our phones and on our computers that people aren't paddling anymore. People aren't fishing anymore. They're not swimming anymore. So I think, you know, getting people out on the water, I think also is just really important to protecting our resource long term, but also to, I think, our quality of life.
Well said. And Cheryl, how are you using technology to keep the Milwaukee River clean?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, you know, it's technology, as you know, is always evolving. We do have a skimmer in Milwaukee, which is run by our sewage treatment plant. They, you know, are also our flood manager, so they help with the managing regional flooding. But they go out and regularly skim up kind of like that floating plastic, which I know is a problem in India and a lot of other places too. Just the unbelievable amount of trash, especially during rain events, that plastic, you know, tends to float, right? It doesn't like break down. It just breaks down into smaller little pieces that are more consumed by fish and aquatic life and stuff. So, you know, we do have in any city, you know, a good amount of floatable trash and different trash that comes into the river during rain events. So we are, you know, we do have a system of trying to remove as much of that as possible. We are working too on trying to reduce microplastics with different, they're kind of like robots basically that clean up the beach microplastics, and also can kind of skim trash from the waterways. I know there's a lot of research going to, you know, we have a very old infrastructure in our town, in our city, in many of our cities, I should say, in our watershed. And it's going to cost a lot of money to replace all of our sewers, you know, our sanitary sewers, our storm sewers. So there's a lot of local folks working on, you know, whether we can treat kind of bacteria in the pipe system to try to improve that swimmability, to make sure that the water is safe to swim in. And a lot of that is difficult when you have, you know, human waste that's finding its way to the waters through the pipe system, through broken old cracked pipes. So, you know, there are like ultimate solutions that we need, which is kind of replacing a lot of these systems. And in some cases, swapping those gray pipes out for green solutions, things like rain gardens, different practices that are vegetated that allow that water to soak in versus runoff. But in lieu of that, you know, we've been working with a local company that's working on different ceramic filtration. There's another company that's working on UV, which would really essentially clean a lot of that stormwater before it can get into the waterway. And sometimes that stormwater has sewage and other things in it because of the broken infrastructure that we have. So, and I know there's a lot of really exciting science that we're looking at as far as how to deal with PFAS, which I don't know if you guys are dealing with a lot in India, but it's you know, a pollutant that's been around for many decades. It's in our Teflon. It's in kind of the chemicals that we use to ensure that, you know, like our couches and our clothes don't catch on fire, that kind of anti-stick technology. We're finding those chemicals in our rivers, in our, you know, in our water supplies, in our groundwater supplies. So, I mean, I feel like every day I'm hearing about some new technology that's being looked at to try to deal with that problem, which is going to be a very big problem for us and to address, I think, worldwide.
Yeah, well said. And what, in your view, Cheryl, are some of the biggest threats that rivers and water faces in terms of quality around the whole world?
Biggest threats, you know, I really think obviously, you know, climate change is a huge one. You know, as I mentioned before, I mean, to us, that's kind of this increasing flood events. And, you know, we have very old infrastructure, as I just mentioned, and it's really not up to the challenge when you have these very intense weather events. And so that often can result in things like overflows of sewage into the waterway, you know, just a lot of other runoff of contamination from the land. And so I think we have a lot of work to do to become more resilient to climate change. I know in our area, a lot of that is around focus on protecting those floodplains, protecting those river buffers. That's not always possible, you know, in a lot of cities where you have a very dense human population. And, you know, and I think I'm sure in India and in other more coastal areas, there's the added, you know, sea rise and different factors there that are challenging us. And, you know, I think also the loss of global biodiversity is very concerning from the perspective of, you know, like we have a lot of water temperatures, even in our rivers. We have about 110 different locations where we monitor water quality monthly. And we have seen over the last, you know, couple decades, those temperatures increasing. So in our area, that means fish like trout that people eat and that people fish for are a threat because of those rising water temperatures. And that's a similar story, you know, really worldwide. We're seeing those rising water temperatures, which, you know, will impact the fish populations. You know, increasing runoff pollution in our area, in your area, you know, is also that pollution is really impacting fisheries. And there's so much of the world's population depends on that wild fish for survival. And, you know, now we're hearing about changing, jet streams much faster than we were expecting, and the impact that potentially could have, not on only on things like air travel and things that make our lives easier, but also on, you know, on fisheries, on like this like amazing food source for the world. And, you know, I do think that is a huge challenge. And then, you know, certainly that runoff pollution that's coming from in our area, about 80% of one of our rivers, the Milwaukee River, is still relatively agricultural. And so we're seeing a loss of, you know, we used to have tens of thousands of small family farms that farmed in a very, I'd say, sustainable way for the most part. You know, a lot of that pollution soaked in, a lot of the waste from the animals were used to create food, you know, and now we're seeing a lot of those small farms that are failing. And I know this is happening worldwide as well. And we are seeing more consolidation of larger and larger and larger, more like factory farms that have an incredible amount of waste that they need to deal with. And they spread it kind of in a lot of different places that they shouldn't be. And a lot of that is polluting our waters, polluting groundwater, polluting wells, our drinking water supplies. And that is something that we're seeing in our area, that we have a lot of farms that are just growing and growing and growing. And a lot of those smaller farms are unfortunately, you know, dying out. And that's really changing the pollution. that's getting to the waterway, which impacts, you know, our ability to use it for things like fishing and swimming and drinking.
Well said. So time for two more questions. My next question is, how do you in Milwaukee educate the public about the importance of river conservation? Because, you know, as they say, you've got to start them young, and I'm sure children understand the importance of river water much, much better than people of my generation who are the boomers.
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, I think we have a lot of groups in our area that specialize on education. And I think early on in my career, I think I thought, well, those other people are doing this much better than we are. You know, maybe it's not as important and we're really focusing in on science. And but we, you know, I'd say over the last like 10 to 15 years, we have had full-time educators on staff that go into classrooms and often bring river critters with them. If we don't have time to get the kids to the river, we take the river to the kids and really teach them. We have a lesson, which is River Keeper for a Day, like what we, you know, how you advocate for your waters, how you advocate for the environment. And we teach kids about the critters, the macroinvertebrates, and the base, you know, the kind of base food of the food chain in the river system and how important they are for telling us how the water's doing. And we also teach them chemistry tests on you know, how to look for things like oxygen and temperature that are really important for sustaining life in a water system. And so we've been reaching out to like hundreds of public schools and private schools every year doing that. We have what we call a river report card that we put out every year, which summarizes all of the water quality data that our volunteers take. But we also include other government data, like from our Department of Natural Resources and our sewage district. We kind of every year give a report card to the river. How is it doing? Where is it getting better? Where is it not getting better? And then we, you know, have a pretty robust social media, you know, newsletters, things like that, that we send out. But we do many presentations, like I'd say well over 100. I probably do well over 100 presentations a year. I have one tonight. Doing a presentation to a youth group in a town called Cedarburg, which is just north of here. But, you know, really getting out there and teaching people about water quality and what they can do is just so important. And we also like to have fun. I mean, I love paddling. I love being in a kayak or a canoe. We do, you know, quite a few boat trips every year, getting people out onto the water, as I mentioned before, so that they can really help us be those stewards, walking tours, things like that. We do a lot of media. I had an interview yesterday morning before my day started, talking about how our Great Lakes, you know, we have the lowest ice we've ever had on the Great Lakes in the wintertime. And that can really lead to more evaporation, more erosion, can cause a lot of, you know, changes to our water systems here. So, you know, I do a lot of public education through the media as well, just to get the word out. But you know, it is so important. I think a lot of people kind of drive over rivers every day, you know, on their way to work, on their way to visit their families, or maybe walk over them, you know, but they don't really pay attention to them. And, and you know, we often tell people too, if, you know, not everyone's a fisherman, I guess, or not everyone, a lot of people are scared of water, so they don't want to necessarily be on a boat. And those are my favorite people to get in a boat, because they often after like 15 minutes are just having the time of their lives. But, you know, all of our rivers drain to our Lake Michigan here, which is the source of our drinking water supply. So if nothing else, it's the importance of protecting drinking water is so important, not only for us, but for future generations. And so educating people that what they do, the choices they make as far as the pesticides they're putting on their land, you know, maybe the road salt that they're putting out to minimize ice during our winters, the, you know, the products they're buying at the store, all that single use plastic. We have a separate coalition that's called Plastic Free MKE, which is an abbreviation for Milwaukee, but trying to get people to stop using single-use plastics because of the real plague that they're causing to waterways in our area and across the world. You know, just trying to really be more mindful of what you're buying, how you're buying it, and minimizing kind of your impact on the earth. I think it's just it can't be underestimated how important it is.
Well said. Well said. Cheryl, on that note, I just want to say thank you so much for speaking to me about your journey. Thank you for speaking to me at such length about the Milwaukee River. I think what you're doing for the Milwaukee River and what a lot of people who are your colleagues are doing for rivers in the US, I'm sure there's a lot to learn by, you know, for rivers around the whole world. I think rivers are, you know, our lifelines in every single country, every single city that we live in. And my conversation with you really gave me an insight into a lot of things that every one of us can do to protect this incredibly valuable asset that all of us have. Thank you for speaking to us and good luck to you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.